And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is God, the supernatural, and the afterlife. Each of my guests is discussing a belief system that we as humans have. My first guest embraces the idea that we're approaching immortality. We discuss the scientific, moral, and societal implications of such a theory contained in his book, Long for This World. My second guest survived a journey that we all take, but few of us return from. He died and returned from the afterlife to tell of his incredible experience. He offered proof of the afterlife from his book of the same name. My next guest addresses the religious reflex that is intrinsic in all humans. He uses science to prove that God is not a delusion, but rather a sophisticated cognitive illusion. We'll discuss how this belief has led us to our survival as a species from his book, The Belief Instinct. And as always, if you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Jesse Baring is the director of the Institute of Cognitive and Culture and is a reader at the University of History and Anthropology at Queen's University in Belfast, Northern Ireland. He is a research psychologist by training, and he writes a popular weekly column, Bearing It in Mind. Jesse is the co-principal investigator in the Explaining Religion Project, which is a three-year, €2 million project funded by the European Commission. Jesse is also the co-principal investigator for the John Templeton Foundation Project to discover the evolutionary relationship between cooperation, mortality, and religion. Jesse's work has been covered widely throughout the media, too many places to name right here. Interestingly enough, he's the son of a traveling glue salesman. He currently lives in Belfast, Northern Ireland, with his partner Juan, their two border terriers, and a very large cat. Welcome to the show, Jesse. How are you today?
Good. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. I'm fine and looking forward to the interview, but no more than Joel, who called in even before the interview started. So we'll go ahead and take his call. Joel, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, Joel. It's Bill. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Terrific. Thanks for calling. You have a question for Jesse?
I have two questions.
Okay, fire.
First, I'm sure you're probably going to cover this stuff anyway, but I'm really curious to find out what the answer is. Jesse, love the book. Understand the obvious evolutionary advantages to believing in God, who sees what we do and motivates us to do better and be more altruistic and better than our primate instincts and all that stuff. But in the long term, do you think that advantage will continue to hold true? I guess, in other words, since a belief in God has also spurred sectarian war and violence and continues to feed intolerance and anti-intellectualism, do you think that we're on the cusp of a change point for a belief in God's evolutionary advantage? Is it now doing more harm than good? That's my first question.
Oh, great question, Joel.
Right. That is a good question. Yeah.
My second question is shorter, I'll just shoot it in there. Do you believe that humans will ever evolve to the point where we can transfer or copy our organic consciousness into bodies or computer networks and thereby achieve the natural laws of death?
Wow, the singularity, as Ray Kurzweil talks about. There's
exactly,
a lot there.
Yeah.
Joel, thank you so much for the calls. Appreciate it. Jesse, there's a lot there. We were going to cover that, but since Joel brought it up, let's dive right into it.
Those are excellent questions.
Yeah.
In relation to the first question, I suppose I'm much more of a pessimist than some sort of radical rationalist, in the sense that we could somehow overcome the tendency to believe, or the seductiveness and the natural pull to believe in an afterlife, and God and destiny and so on. Whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, I think that largely depends on the sociopolitical context and how these particular cognitive biases are manifested within different societies. It's not necessarily inherently a bad thing, I don't think, to believe or a religion. I think it has been used that way, and it certainly can manipulate people. There are also, a host of studies suggesting that these cognitive illusions, the sense that God is watching you, for example, actually or is concerned about you as an individual, actually confers some, not just reproductive benefits, but some subjective well-being in terms of health outcomes with terminally ill patients and so on. So I think it's a very nuanced question, and it's not a black and white issue in terms of whether religion is a good or a bad thing.
Well, it is, and that's a very good question that Joel posed to you. We're talking to Jesse Baring, everybody. The book is The Belief Instinct, The Psychology of Souls, Destiny, and the Meaning of Life. But let me ask a little bit more nuanced question than Joel asked, and that is, all right, we need to believe it's inherent, it's been part of our evolution, which we'll discuss in just a few minutes, which is the thesis of your book. But is the whole idea of heaven, hell, the omnipotent God that's overlooking everything, is that just a religious construct that really plays on our theory of the mind and to maintain the religion's hold over the believers.
Right. So the central premise of the book is that human beings have what I would call a cognitive specialization. And this is the ability to think about unobservable minds. So I think the best example is if you were, you know, giving a talk in front of a big public lecture and you look out into the sort of sea of faces and people moving about in different ways and shrugging their shoulders, shaking their heads, all sorts of things, we're literally only seeing physical bodies. But because we have this thing called a theory of mind, we can think about and sometimes obsess over what other people are thinking. This is why public speaking is so difficult for so many people. You know, other minds are basically interfering with our ability to get the message across. And I mean, I've got horrendous social anxiety, actually, so it's always very difficult for me to look out into an audience at all these bodies and think about all these minds evaluating me. But I think this is something fundamentally unique to human beings as a species, or at least we're uniquely good at it. We are natural psychologists, as my colleague, you know, Nicholas Humphrey at LSE has said. We have evolved to take into consideration other people's psychological states. And that was enormously useful from an evolutionary perspective because it helped us to predict and to explain other people's behavior. And that had significant adaptive utility in terms of interacting with others. The problem was that it was so adaptive that it seems to have sort of spilled into the natural world into different categories where it didn't properly belong. So we see minds where minds don't in fact exist. And you know, reasoning about misfortunes, for example, as being a message from a supernatural agent, a god, or you know, your dead relative or something like that, trying to give you a message or in response to something that you've done in the past, requires this basic theory of mind capacity. We're putting ourselves into the shoes of the supernatural agent. And we simply couldn't think like that if we didn't have this very basic social cognitive ability called a theory of mind. So that's the common denominator underlying, in my view, underlying all the sort of the very basics of religious belief. Now, of course, different religions have a very complex and distinctive elements, you know, a lot of sort of exotic features of different religious belief systems, and the theological canons are going to differ dramatically. But you do find commonalities across all religions, and that's, you know, seeing messages in natural events, reasoning that the mind or some essence of the self somehow survives biological death, reasoning that you are here as an individual and as a group, as human beings, for a particular purpose or reason. These are the sort of existential basics that we find in all religious belief systems, and they become materialized through indoctrination and culture to sort of give flesh to them in terms of the specific content of the belief.
All right, but Jesse, it begs the bigger question because, you know, as we evolve, we get smarter, we're more rational, and we try to reject superstition as much as possible, but why do we find ourselves projecting our state of mind, as you call it, the theory of mind, onto inanimate objects and really gravitating towards these unseen, unforeseen forces that guide our destiny?
Right. So, I mean, with respect to inanimate objects, I mean, if your car breaks down when you're in the middle of you're trying to get to an interview or something like that, you might get angry at the car, kick the tires. You don't literally believe that the car did this maliciously, but nevertheless, you're reacting that way, as though it's morally culpable for this situation.
Well, in that example, that's true. But let me remind you of an example that you use in the book, which is the movie The Red Balloon in 1956. And tell our listeners about the movie and how we assign, you know, human characteristics and beliefs to this red balloon.
Right. So The Red Balloon, I mean, which was one of my favorite movies as a child, it basically follows, it's a story of a little boy walking through the streets of Paris. He's 5 years old, and this red balloon starts following him and seemingly befriends him. And you can't help but look at the actions of the balloon as being intentional. You know, we're attributing some sort of emotions and desires. You know, the balloon wants to be close to the boy. It's trying to befriend the boy. It's trying to get into the house after the grandmother closes the window. It's very difficult not to see the film in that way. And we can, you know, obviously this is the sort of magical oof that, you know, we enter into in entertainment. But to turn off our theory of mind in respect to viewing that scene is very, very difficult to do. We don't have to invest fully in the belief itself that this is in fact true. And I think very much, you know, something very similar to that happens with atheists, for example, or people who don't necessarily believe in God. They still experience the illusion of God, of, or at least some supernatural agent being concerned about their social behavior, or them mattering in a world outside of human beings in some meaningful way. But they don't have to trust that psychological intuition as reflecting a reality outside of their heads. And I think, I mean, for me, that's the case. That, you know, I would, you know, confess that I've felt at times that God cared about me, that I have a destiny, those types of things. But I, you know, my own personal intuitions would be the last thing in the world that I would trust as reflecting reality.
All right, we're talking to Jesse Baring, everybody, author of the book, The Belief Instinct, The Psychology of Souls, Destiny, and the Meaning of Life. And so tell us, in our evolution as a species, how is it that the belief instinct has helped us evolve? Joel alluded to it in his question, but I'd like you to flesh it out a little bit more for my listeners.
Sure. Well, the central argument that I'm making, and this is largely, keep in mind, sort of an idea book. I'm trying to, you know, it might sound speculative, but I think there's a mounting body of evidence in support of this theoretical position. But the issue is that human beings, unlike any species on the face of the earth that has ever come before or perhaps will ever come after us, have a unique adaptive problem, and that's the problem of language. And most evolutionary biologists and evolutionary theorists have seen language as a very good thing, and it is a good thing in many ways. It helps us to sort of share our subjective lives with others and give people instructions and build technology and how to do things and so on. But language also came with a significant cost, and that was the fact that people could begin talking about the things that we've done, basically gossip about us. So inhibition became an essential feature of human sociality, because what I do in front of one other person, if there's a witness to what I do, and if it's some sort of transgression or antisocial behavior, that person can tell somebody who didn't see the event happen, who could tell somebody else who didn't see the event happen, on and on and on, just sort of this information grasshoppering from mind to mind to mind to mind. And punishment could come, you know, days, weeks, months, years after the original event. But ultimately, my reputation is going to be hampered. So I had to basically trade in the short-term genetic gains by acting impulsively and selfishly, very much like chimpanzees, for example, in favor of the long-term benefits from acquiring a good pro-social reputation in the group. And the sense that something is watching us or evaluating us and can respond to our bad behavior in the form of misfortunes or punishment in the afterlife and those types of things, basically served to inhibit those behaviors. It kept us good in most cases. You know, there are lots of theoretical caveats to this, and I'd lay this out, I think, quite clearly in the book, but, you know, being bad and being selfish isn't always a bad thing for our genes. Sometimes it actually works. But the general rule is that it's always safer to be pro-social than anti-social. And the sense of being observed and being watched, whether it's by your dead mother or by, you know, God or whatever supernatural agent is in your culture, helped us to thwart costly mistakes.
All right, but we're talking to Jesse Baring. The Belief Instinct is his book. But let me just ask you in about the minute that we have left, if God is looking down on us and God is ultimately going to pass judgment on us, isn't that really the ultimate trying to read God's mind? And isn't that just a little bit presumptuous of us to think that we could even think that we could read God's mind?
I think anybody who has any semblance of belief in God is trying to psychoanalyze God, is trying to get into God's head. Whether it's presumptuous or not, I don't know. I think it's quite natural to do that. But I think that, you know, even for people who say that, I think just to say that God's mind is unknowable, I think that's presumptuous, because that suggests that God has a mind to begin with. And I think that, you know, God has largely been replaced by mystery, and people like to keep the mystery, and they're very reactive and averse to any attempts to dismiss or to dismantle the mystery itself.
All right. We've been talking to Jesse Baring, The Belief Instinct, The Psychology of Souls, Destiny, and the Meaning of Life. Jesse, it's a fascinating subject and is a good read, as Joel, our caller, will attest. Tell us, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about your writings, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Sure. I think the best website would just simply be www.thebeliefinstinct.com, and make sure you put the before that.
TheBeliefInstinct.com. We've been talking to Jesse Baring and talking about his very provocative book, The Belief Instinct. Jesse, thank you so much for being our special guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.